Hi everyone. Before we get started today, I want to talk to you about our newest partner, BetterHelp. Throughout my own grieving process, I have found therapy to be critical in getting me to the point where I am today, and I truly cannot imagine getting through this past year without it. A lot of the world is still in some sort of quarantine or phased opening, and BetterHelp is a perfect platform for accessing therapy during this time because you can do it from wherever you are. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with a licensed professional therapist, and you can have your first session scheduled in as little as 24 hours, which is huge. I know for a lot of people, you hit a roadblock in starting therapy because there's a pressure to really find the right fit. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches. It's really easy to change a counselor if you feel like you want a better fit. The therapist you're matched with is available weekly, but you can send messages anytime through the app and get responses between sessions, which makes such a big difference, especially when you are processing a loss. BetterHelp is more affordable than traditional offline therapy, and they also have financial aid available, which I love and is one of the reasons that I decided to partner with them. We have a special offer for the Grief Coach listeners where you'll get 10% off your first month at trybetterhelp.com/thegriefcoach. That's trybetterhelp.com/thegriefcoach. You can join over 500,000 people taking charge of their mental health with the help of experienced professionals. Investing in yourself is so important. If you've listened to any of the previous episodes, you know how much I prioritize doing the work to get through the grief process, and BetterHelp is a wonderful platform to leverage to do so. Go to trybetterhelp.com/thegriefcoach to get started. Hi everyone, welcome to The Grief Coach. This is your host, Brooke James. If you've listened to us before, welcome back. And if it is your first time listening, I'm so glad you're here. Today, I am so excited to have with us Jamie Alice, who is the host of Grief Uncovered. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yes, absolutely. I'm so excited. We've connected online. I'm really just like pumped for the conversation. So let's get straight into it. So if you could tell the audience a little bit about who you are, what's your story, what's your grief story, which always feels like such a funny way to say it.
I know. But
want to give everyone a baseline for your experience.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm Jamie again, and I am 31 in Houston, Texas. My mom passed away when I was 26, so it's been a little over 4 years. She passed away from a 5-year battle with breast cancer that then spread to her spine. I don't know the technical term for that, so we'll just keep it at that. I am the oldest. There's 3 of us, and at the time when my mom passed away, it was just me, my brothers, my dad's not in the picture. So big eye opener, my first loss in life. Like my second funeral I went to my whole life was my mom. So I did not know what was going on in my life.
And
I've learned so much these past 4 years that I mean, I'm so like proud of the place I am now and I've come so far, but man, it's been a journey. So grief is interesting, but you know, every day gets a little easier.
Yeah. I was talking to someone this morning and it's like intellectually, you know, like that grief will change your life, but you don't realize how fundamental the shift is until after you experience a loss.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I always say like, and I hate like if you've never lost someone, I think this is so cheesy, but like, I feel like it's a weight, like a backpack of like stress on your shoulders. And like, I always say like the longer you get to deal with grief, the lighter the bag comes, but it's always with you.
Yeah. There's so many places and things I want to talk about, but I think that if we can start with, you're the oldest sibling.
And has the loss like changed your relationship with your brothers? Did you, we've talked about this on the phone, but not on the podcast, of how do you deal with like different siblings who are grieving differently and like needing different things at different times? And how did you navigate that? What was that like?
It's interesting because I have two brothers. So it's not, I mean, maybe people have brothers that are super in touch with their feelings and like super
mine.
Emotional. Okay, that's my brothers are not like that. You know, my brother like fishes, and then my other brother's like in Colorado skateboarding all day, every day. So okay. It's, yeah, they're very unique, but we were always close, you know, that typical family, like whatever. But now it's like we're on another level. It's like now I'm, you know, when it's like, well, you can't pick your siblings, you're kind of stuck with them. But it's like, mm-hmm. now I would pick them as my siblings. Like they're yeah. people that, even if they weren't related to me, I would be so close to, kind of thing. Mm-hmm, and it was tough because I wanted to take care of myself and focus on me. But then I had these people that are also dealing with the loss of my mom. And then also one thing that really made me the most emotional when she first passes, wow, I got 26 years with her. They only got 22 and 18 years. Mm-hmm. And that was really hard for me to just digest that. You know, I'm going through this hard time and I had more time with her. Like their time was cut even shorter. So that was a hard pill for me to swallow, but I'm not going to say.
Did you feel like, guilt around it? Or that's, I don't know. I don't know if I would have thought of, I didn't ever think about that with my brother.
I didn't feel guilt. I just felt, I would be like sad and my friend's like, what's wrong? And I was just like, I'm so sad that my brothers are in so much pain. Like I'm in pain and I get it, but like the thought of, I mean, I guess it's like anyone, like the thought of a loved one suffering was just really hard for me. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm not going to say I'm a pro on sibling support. I just check in with them, let them know I'm here. Mm-hmm. I have one brother who's very in touch with, you know, his grief and his journey.
What did you do to navigate the, did you find that? Because I really saw after my dad passed away of his four children, so my siblings, of like we all had wildly different coping mechanisms mm-hmm. and what we wanted to talk about, how we want to talk about it. And it was even like when he was sick of what roles we stepped into. Can you talk a little bit about your experience with that?
Yeah, I think so when my mom was still alive but sick, I mean, you know, just like me. Chemo appointments, doctor's appointments, surgeries, like all that fun stuff. And mm-hmm. we did a good job making sure, I mean, we were all working and my brothers were in school. I wasn't in school. Actually, I was when she was first diagnosed. But anyway, like, okay, who can be there to support her? So that was our focus. And then yeah. when she passed, I felt like grief is so personal. And like I said, I'm not an expert by any means. So I never wanted to be like, this is what you should be doing. You know, I was just like, if you want to talk, I'm here. But I never tried to push anything. And maybe that wasn't good. Maybe I should have been like, we need to have a conversation about mom. But it was just kind of like leaving that door open. They're pretty independent. And I just tried to find that line of support, but not being like that bossy older sister kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a hard balance to strike, I feel like, with yeah. younger siblings, because some just like inherently in the relationship of being an older sibling, there is bossiness. I mean, definitely my brother would say I'm bossy, but like, and I'm like super blunt anyway. So when we would be like cleaning the house out, I would be like, I need you to come with me to go through the Christmas stuff. And he was like, okay, no problem.
I love it.
Like, but so it's finding the balance of advocating for yourself and what you need in your grief, but also how do you respect what someone else's grieving process is, which is mm-hmm. such a hard balance to strike.
Yeah. And you never want to be that know-it-all like for grief. It's not a good
no, no. And especially like us as podcasters, people, well, you're a grief expert. I'm like, me? Really? I am. Oh, no. Like, but how, do people ever say that to you? Because I'm like, oh, I guess I am. I have all these episodes about this and I talk about this, but I don't think of myself as an expert, which is so funny.
No, I can just speak from my experience.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Let's talk about the podcast though, to transition there. What made you decide to start your podcast?
Okay. So I actually love telling this story because I think it's kind of funny. So okay. I live for podcasts. I love listening to them. I love that you can clean your house and have a podcast on and you're learning something or you're connecting with someone like through just listening to them. And I think it's such a good platform. My friends would always, you know, everyone should have a podcast kind of thing. Like my friends are like, you should have a podcast. You would be funny, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay. So about year 3.5, 4 of my grief. No, I'm sorry. I just am in year 4. About year 3, 3.5 of my grief. I'm like, I had that aha moment that you had way before I did, but that's like, okay, no one talks about this. I know I'm not the only millennial that has dealt with apparent loss. And here I am going to grief groups with like 7-year-old women. Like it was not working out for me. Like searching for help and I couldn't find it. And maybe I wasn't searching hard enough. I'm not going to read a book about grief. That's not my vibe. And so I was like, okay, I want to connect with people on this because the times I felt the best, the most at peace is when I was talking to someone else who has gone through a parent loss. That is when I was like, holy shit, you get it. You get that feeling at night or that loneliness or that aching in your heart. Like, oh my God, I'm not alone. I'm not crazy.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, everyone's like, you should start a podcast. I don't know why they say that, but whatever. And I'm like, I think I'm going to do a grief podcast. I thought about it for like a month. I was like, fuck yeah, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
And I didn't talk to anyone. I kept it very private until I had like a logo and everything. And then I would call my friends and be like, okay, guys, I'm going to start a podcast like you said. And they're like, woohoo. And I'm like, it's about grief. And they're like, what? It was just not what they're expecting kind of thing. And I'm like, it's okay. Like, we'll make it work. It'll be funny. And so mine's just focused kind of like yours. I say real people, real stories, and how they handle grief every day.
It's so important, I think, both from the having experienced grief of being able to find other stories. So grief is so isolating, even though everyone experiences it at some point or another. But while it's happening to you, you're like, I am the only one who's ever felt like this. So to be able to listen and share those stories, but then also I want people who haven't experienced loss to listen, because we talked about this a lot when I was on your podcast, that no one knows how to talk about grief. Mm-hmm. No one knows how to talk to someone who is grieving. And it's because we don't share these stories because it's seen as like not okay. I'm doing air quotes and not socially acceptable. I think the more avenues for sharing these stories about loss, like, will help people build empathy and compassion. Because I think maybe I'm being naive, but I hope just the reason people aren't good at talking about it is because they haven't been exposed to it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
But maybe that's idealistic. I don't know.
No, I think so. And like, I just had a girl on last week who had lost both her parents, tried to commit suicide. And she was the funnest, nicest person I've talked to. And who knew you went through something like that 10 years ago? Like, you never know what someone's going through. And yeah, empathy is a huge thing I've learned through this whole journey.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I used to be that person that was like, suck it up. Life is hard.
Well, it's like, how do you find the balance between, yes, everyone has problems, but also coming from a place of compassion? Because I think it's striking a balance.
Yes, for sure.
So want to change gears a little bit. One thing people who've listened to the podcast before have heard me touch on a little bit is like thinking about that my dad like won't be there. I'm like very single. Who knows if I'll get married, but the thought of a wedding and him not being there is enough to move me to tears if I spend more than 3 seconds thinking about it. So if you could tell the audience a little bit about what was your experience in planning your wedding after knowing that like your mom wouldn't be there.
I always say, and I'm sure you feel the same way, I got through 2016. I can get through anything. I planned a funeral and a wedding in the same year. Like,
no
one should go through that. Like, what? That was so stupid. Why was I doing that to myself? But I'm the person that's like, we already sent the save the date, so I guess we're having this thing.
Yeah.
But I really regret even having the wedding so soon. And then I had my bachelorette party like 2 months after my mom died. Like, it was a shit show. I had friends crying about my mom. I had my aunts crying that I was being crazy. Like, it was a shit show.
Wow.
And you're like, bachelorette parties are supposed to be crazy, but like it wasn't fun crazy. It was just weird. My mom passed away in April. I got married in August. And it was just, I feel like planning your wedding is such a special time and such a once in a lifetime. And I'm not going to say like it was overshadowed by my mom not being there, but it was something like, I was just like, I want to fucking plan this shit and get it done with. And like, I have other things to worry about. So I didn't like enjoy the planning process. Sorry. Like, to be brutally honest.
That's okay. But, this is an honest, safe place.
Yeah. But, and then it's also, I mean, I have so many friends that get married and they're like, my mom has helped me so much. And I'm like, yeah, and my mom would have helped me too. Like, no wonder I fucking hated planning this thing. But the planning was tough because you have to find that line of like, how do I honor my mom at my wedding and then not make the wedding about my mom? So, you know, you've seen all those things on Pinterest. Like, we had a chair for my mom that was more like, whatever, my aunts came up with that. I'm like, sure, put a flower on it. I don't care. Like, I didn't like, it didn't matter. I have pictures of my mom up, like with me and my husband. So I don't know. It was, it was definitely sad and I couldn't believe she wasn't there, but we did little things. My mom loved the Black Keys. When we were announced married and left, like we walked back to a Black Keys song. Like my brother performed a song that my mom liked, little things just to like acknowledge her, but not, you know, put a damper on the day.
Yeah. So what advice would you have for people who are planning weddings who have lost a parent? Of how do you integrate them into the day in a way that feels special without, like, how did you think about that? Because you gave some examples of what you did, but what was your thought process?
So first, I want to also say, it is a lot when you get married because your whole family's in town. Like all your favorite people are there to celebrate you. And my rehearsal dinner, I was a emotional disaster because I hadn't seen all these people since my mom's funeral, you know? And it was just like people were bringing her up and people were sad. And I like got really drunk and cried a lot. And it's kind of funny now. So just like make sure you're aware of your emotions. Like I did it where I was like wasted and then crying. Like it shouldn't have happened like that. Take your time, enjoy the people around you and just be aware. Don't let it just like hit you in the face at once kind of thing.
Yeah.
But for honoring people, I think my girlfriend is doing like a, if you weren't in heaven, you would be here thing. So if you like doing stuff like that, that's cute, with pictures. I did like one thing I did, I had like a bouquet with my mom's flowers she liked. Like they match my flowers, but whatever. And so in pictures, I would hold that instead of my bouquet. So yeah. That was cute. Sweet. Like the aisle walking back to one of her songs. But other than that, that's all I did. And I felt good about that. Like that's all I really needed, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't need the day to be around her. She just had one of those. Just kidding.
No, but it's like, how do you think weddings I've been to, like, people like at one of them, the groom spoke and made a speech of like how much his mom would have like loved to be here and be meeting everybody. Oh, wow. And I was like, wow, I would never be able to get through something like that. And I've seen a lot of people will do like the table with pictures and, and I think it's just like, how do you be thoughtful about the people you love and you miss? Because what is the worst thing is to like pretend that it's fine that they're not there.
Yes.
And so, and this applies to everyday life. Like it's okay to be sad.
The emotional breakdown at my rehearsal dinner.
Right. It's, but yeah, but it's like, it's okay to be sad that someone's not there. And how do you honor someone who you love in your life?
Yeah. I think whatever was special to that person, you'll find a way. My mom loved music, so that was a no-brainer to me kind of thing.
Yeah.
I suggest not Pinteresting things. Like, think of what your loved one, how they would want to be honored and make it, like, unique to them and not just, well, I saw this cool thing on, you know, Instagram or whatever.
Yeah, that's great advice.
But, yeah, I couldn't do a speech like that. That's very brave of him.
No, there is no way. I was talking to my brother a few weeks ago. I don't remember if I talked about this on the podcast or not, but we were talking about like weddings, and I don't know if I could like, cause all the traditions of like the dad walking you down the aisle, like the father-daughter dance. And so I think about that and I like freak out. And Travis was like, I think I'd be fine if, you know, to have a wedding. And I was like, yeah, cause you don't have to do like those things. Whereas I'm like, maybe I'll just go to City Hall.
It'd be way cheaper.
I don't have to think about this yet. So it's fine.
Yeah. But it is. Oh, I was just going to say, there's this like blogger I follow. I'm obsessed with her, and her dad passed away. And she says every time she goes to a wedding and they do the father-daughter dance, like she walks outside and hangs out with her husband. I think that's great advice. If you can't handle certain things at certain events, set those boundaries for yourself. You don't need to prove anything to anyone.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, the wedding I went to last summer that there was a father-daughter dance, I left and went to the bathroom.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I don't need this. Like, no.
They respect that. You know, no one's like going to be mad about that. So I think that's right. Good advice.
Yeah, absolutely. So switching gears then to just what you learned is not maybe the right way to phrase it, but how you handled like, because 5 years is a long time to deal with watching someone you love be sick. Like, I think for me, I wish I had more time with my dad, but because it was so condensed, it was so hard having to do that for a long period of time, I think would just be like emotionally really taxing and exhausting. So if you can talk about that, what you did to find joy during that time, how you acknowledged like the anticipatory grief, I think is a really important topic. So anything in that realm.
So my mom's journey, she was diagnosed. I'll never forget the day like she told us she had cancer. Like I was going into my senior year of college. I don't know if you know a lot about A&M, but you have like an Aggie ring and you get like your ring one day. It's like bigger than graduation. And like, it was like 2 months before my ring day. My mom tells me like she's starting chemo. And I was like, oh, this fucks up a lot of plans I have. Like, I was like, this is not in the schedule, but told us she had breast cancer and she had to get a surgery to see if it was in her lymph nodes. Cause if it was, that would be a little more severe than what we anticipated. And I'm just like, what? Like I don't know about you, but I was someone who only saw cancer in October at breast cancer awareness stuff. I didn't know anything about cancer. And so she told us she had cancer and we were all like, what? Like, felt like you got hit by a bus, but like, okay, well, my mom's super strong. Like, we got this. Like, she's going to beat it. Duh. Like, yeah, it wasn't even a thought. It was like, here's the thing. You do chemo, then radiation, then you go into remission. I thought it was kind of like it'll be a hard time, but we'll get through this. Mm-hmm. So she did her surgery. It was in her lymph nodes. So then that's like more intense.
Way serious. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that was a terrible day. And she did chemo. And like, my mom was someone who, and I don't know how your parents did it, but my mom didn't like lie about cancer, but she never made it sound bad. She was never like, oh, I have stage 4 cancer. She was just like, I have cancer. Here's our plan. Like, very optimistic and positive. She didn't go into detail with her kids, which I respect that choice. So she would do like chemo and we would all have groups come and like give her all her, she like would request like lemon drops and like fun stuff. And it would like, we have a story that we legit got kicked out because we were too loud. And my mom had to move her chemo to a different room, into an isolated room because we were too loud in the like main chemo room. Yeah. I thought that was pretty funny, but
I love that.
Yeah. So she did, you know, lost her hair, all that stuff. Went through radiation and then she was in remission. So the cancer went away and we were so happy. And I was like, oh yeah, my mom's superwoman. She did that. That was awesome. Blah, blah, blah. And she was great. Like when she was sick, she always tried to keep everything normal, which I think for kids was really, really good for us. We knew she was sick, but she kept a lot of things, you know, to herself. And then I guess a year later, she had really bad back pains. A year and a half later, she had really bad back pains and then she went to the ER And then they were like, yeah, you have cancer in your spine. And where do we go from here? And it was kind of like, we just did this shit. She just, like, her hair's growing back. We've gone through all this and now we have to do it again. And then it was pretty quick once we got to that point. That was in July and she passed away by March. Or I'm sorry. Hello. She passed away in April. So that was tough. But man, I mean, I know you're in the same boat experiencing cancer loss. They're just memories that I will never, that I can't unsee kind of thing. I don't know if you feel that way, but it was so, so hard towards the end when it's just like taking over their body at that point.
Yeah, I think I blocked a lot of it out because it was like so awful. And it's like the person who you love and who's always been strong, and then you're, it's a weird like shift. And then also like when you have to start taking care of them, whether it was from a like, hi, you need to be sure you take your medicine, or whether it is like helping when they start, their bodies start to become weak and like they're in hospice and they're dying. Mm-hmm. It was just very jarring and unsettling. But I think because I was running on so much adrenaline, I would like have a moment of like, this is awful. I would cry a lot. And then I would be like, okay, here we go. Mm-hmm. And I was similar to you, and we'll talk about this in a minute, of I was power of attorney. I was healthcare proxy. Like I, my sister and I are co-executors of the estate, but there's so much administration of mm-hmm. someone dying and no one ever talks about that.
Yeah.
So like,
and you're just supposed to like squeeze it in your daily schedule, like,
right, right. You know. And so it was just really, really awful. And I remember, I don't think I've told this story before, but being really mad because my cousin and my sisters were out at my dad's, and this was maybe a month before he died, and his decline was like rapid. Once that was like, there is no hope. I think he was like, I'm done. I don't want to live like this. And it was just like, within a month, he had started painkillers, and they were like, we think you should come out here, like, while we're all here. And I was like, I'm coming Sunday, like, it's fine. And they were like, no, we really think that you shouldn't see him like this by yourself. And I was like,
wow,
what do you mean? And they had switched, they hadn't like gotten to the right point on his painkillers yet, so they had given him like too much, and it was like a combination. It was so, he like, and I got there and I was like, oh, okay. Like, I see. And I remember having this, like, cause I was like getting in like a fight with my cousins and my siblings. And I had this conversation with my cousin. We were out on the balcony and I was like, I need to maintain some sense of normalcy that my world is not crashing around me. And for me, that was, I had a dinner with friends the night before. I was like, because you go into this, like, this can't be happening. Like, I can't believe this. Like, yeah, that this is
my life.
Right. This is, and I was just like, I can't do it. But I think I, that experience of like, he couldn't hold a cup up, he couldn't move around, and he was a big dude. He was 6'2", strong. And it was just like, so unsettling to have that shift of like, and I was helping with some of the caregiving stuff, and I was involved with like his at the hospital and going to doctor's appointments, but like that shift of like, oh, like he can't take care of himself anymore. Like that was the hardest for me.
Oh yeah. My thing, my mom like would walk in the morning and at night, that was like her exercise. Mm-hmm. And yeah, when she couldn't, when it was like hard for her to walk, like she would try and go on a walk and she would literally walk like three houses and come back. And that was like a win, but it was like, what the fuck is going on? Do you watch the show Yellowstone at all?
No, I don't know about it. Okay, I'm really bad, like, at TV. Okay.
No, it's just, so me and my husband are watching it, and this actually happened last night, but the first season, the main character is like going through, he has cancer and he's throwing up blood and all this stuff. And I just like broke down, and I don't cry about my mom on the reg. I'm not a big crier and I could not stop crying. And Brad's like, my husband's like, what's going on? I'm like, just like the thought, those emotions of her final few weeks, like you said, like when they can't take care of themselves and their body's just like out of control. I hate thinking about that time. It's like the time that and then into hospice, I like to kind of cancel.
No, I think I really have blocked it out. And I think I also blocked out the like afterwards for a month or two. I could barely get out of bed. I couldn't have a conversation with like anybody. My grandma's like, when are you going back to work? I was like, what?
You're like,
I would go to SoulCycle. I would go to Pilates. I would walk like 5 miles a day. And that was it. I can't like talk to anybody.
Yeah. But don't you look back and you're like, like I said, like I can get through anything since I've gone through all that.
Yeah. Well, because it's like, you think you're like, well, what's the worst thing that could happen? Like, right. And I think we
can't get worse.
We've talked about this. And like, when I decided to start my own business, I was like, what's the worst thing that'll happen? Like, well, we'll just see. Like,
it's very true.
And I think it gives you back to what we were talking about earlier, of this like perspective of like that you can't get it until after you experience something like this.
Yeah, I agree. And I think like the Dead Parents Club is like terrible, but I think like the Dead Parents from Cancer Club is even worse. I don't know. I'm not trying to like compare grief to people, but it's just such a unique experience.
And I think it's different, like having a parent die unexpectedly, you don't see them like decline like that, but you also don't get to say goodbye. So like that also would be terrible. So it's like, yes, you saw the decline, but like you knew and you could prepare yourself, and that anticipatory grief, which I found, this might be like a twisted thing to say, but like being like watching them like get closer to death helps you process that like this is really happening, as like painful as it is. And as much as you want to look the other way, it's like, no, this is happening. And so it preps you in a different way, I think.
Yeah. See, my brother always says that. He's like, I started grieving mom's death before she died. And I don't think I thought like that. Like, I don't know what I was thinking, but I was never, oh, I'm starting my grieving process now. I think I was more focused on like, what are we going to do with all her shit when she dies? Like, oh, I got to figure all this out. I think I was more thinking about that step instead of the grieving part.
Well, and I think especially because like we're the same age, there's this very much like good daughter syndrome of you want to be helping. You want to be helping your siblings. You want to be like getting stuff organized in a way that, I don't know. This is a scientific thing. Have you read about it?
No, but I would love to hear about it.
Okay, so it's basically the expectation that society places on women to be caregivers, that like often and where you see it the most is when parents are older and there's a daughter and a son of like who is doing the day-to-day care. Generally, the daughter who is doing financial care is normally the son. And I've seen it play out in my own family. There's studies about this. So definitely read about it. It's very interesting. But I think that or at least I definitely had these feelings of like, well, I want to like hold it and like all of this stuff needs to get done. And if I just focus on my to-do list, I can't think about how like my world is as I know it ending. And so I definitely focused on the to-do list and the administrivia of the house. Where are all of these things going? What is happening? How do we find a crematorium? Like all of this stuff and the financial, like,
dude, it was crazy. Like when we were in hospice, like I'm like, this is not real life. This is a movie. Like, I can't believe I'm in hospice. Then to go from hospice to like a funeral home, I'm like, now I'm in a funeral home like it was just one thing after another. This is not like pinch me. Like this is not my life. Yeah. But it was. That whole process. Ooh.
Yeah. We talked when I was on your podcast about hospice nurses, I think, and how much we love them. And I was so thankful of, so the night he died, like the overnight person that we had hired was like, it's tonight. And I was like, and I thought I was ready. Cause you know how the hospice nurses are like, tell them it's okay. Mm-hmm. And you're like, what? And so I was telling him every time I would go give him morphine, I'd be like, Dad, it's time. We're going to be okay. Which is like absolute hell. And I like when they first told me to do it, I was like, I can't do that. What do you mean?
That's a lot.
That was a lot. Yeah, I haven't thought about this for a while.
Right? Crazy.
I know. The night that they said it was going to happen, I was like, lost it. But thank God for the overnight hospice nurse, because we did hospice at home. And
okay,
so
I was gonna ask that.
We knew the like funeral home we were going to use, and we prepaid it, like also a fun like thing to be doing. So we call them and they come in. Oh, because my parents were divorced. So like I was the person on the death certificate, like filling it out, talking to the hospice nurse who's like mixing his painkillers with like kitty litter and whatever else they do to destroy all the medicine. Do you remember them doing that?
I don't. I wasn't at home and they were kind of like, right, you should go before all this happens kind of thing.
But thank God this woman was like, you need to go downstairs. I was like, what? And she was like, the last vision of your dad is not going to be him getting carried out of the house.
Exactly.
And I was like, thank God for you. So yeah. What was it like? Because the only experience I know has been hospice at home of like when I think everyone I've been with for like the journey of them being sick has all been hospice at home. So can you talk about hospice in a hospital?
Yeah. My mom, not that she was like anti-hospice at home, but she just didn't want to die in her happy place. Like our house, we like loved our home and stuff. And she's like, no, I want only like good memories there. I don't want the last, you know, vision of me. But I kind of like, I like both of them, because also like hospice in a hospital is more open door. So there were so many people that visited, which is great and awesome, but it took away those last moments that me and the people, you know, her core really needed. And so I felt like half my time was making sure, thank you for coming, good to see you, small talk like that, that I could have done without. And then like we would spend the night there and it would be like, okay, well, like it's been like 36 hours since I've been home, I should go shower. And like, it was just like a hot mess, but it was fine. We did bring, and I think this is a great idea, like we brought pictures from home and like put them, so it was a little more homier than just like a hospital room.
Yeah.
But everyone was great. And like you said, like at the end, they're like, you should probably go because, you know, the people are on their way to do whatever they do. But my mom was in hospice for 2 weeks. It felt like forever. It was the longest 2 weeks of my life.
But I found that my expectation and barometer of what was normal changed so fast. Did you find that?
Yes.
Even though it was like the longest 3 weeks of my life.
Okay.
Like
yours was 3 weeks.
Mm-mm. 3.5 maybe. I remember them being like, we're switching him to morphine. And I was like, what the fuck? I was like, that means he's dying right now, even though like he's in hospice. And they were like, we're starting with pediatric dose. Do you think you can do this? I was like, no. And then like 2 days later, I'm filling up like the whole thing of like, okay, we're like prepping all of the like.
Oh my goodness.
But my expectation of normal changed so, so, so fast in a way that I don't think I could explain to someone who wasn't there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. And like we talked about on my podcast, it's crazy how they can give you a day by day of what's going to happen. I don't know if yours was the same with your dad, but with my mom, like, okay, the cancer is now taken over. And once it got to like her kidney in her liver, they were like, I guess the morphine time, like there's no hope at that point. Yeah. And then just to see their body change so much, it's just not the best memories.
No,
it's like, it's also crazy. You see like people die in like car wrecks and stuff like that, and it's so instant. And then that kind of death like took freaking 2 weeks of like watching her body break down to actually die. I don't know. That's really morbid, but that whole part was crazy of like how bad it gets before it just shuts down.
I was surprised at how much he aged.
Exactly. Oh, whoa.
I was like, cause like, I don't think of him that way. I remember my uncle who is a photographer and he was taking pictures while he was in hospice and of like everyone who came to visit. And while it was happening, I was like, I hate this. But now it's, oh, that's a way to like kind of remember what happened. But I look at the pictures of like what he looked like and I'm like, what? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Cancer sucks.
the fucking worst. And can you tell the audience a little bit about like what you've learned in your own grief journey, how it's changed? Because I'm only a year and a half, which is not a long time. Mm-hmm. So of like,
at least you've been through your first of everything by now, yeah. Like your first holiday and stuff without him.
Yeah. Yeah. Terrible.
I was very different than you. And I know I've mentioned this before. It's not that I like didn't talk about it. I mean, I didn't talk about it, but I didn't like realize I wasn't talking about it, if that makes mm-hmm. sense. Yeah. Like, I'm like, if it really is bothering me, I'll bring it up. But if I'm at dinner, I don't want to talk about it. And like I don't know. Grief is very private to me. And I kept it very private for a while. And now like, once I found how comforting it is to connect with people on it, I freaking talk about it all the time, I feel like. But I just learned, have a good support system. And it doesn't have to be 20 people. It can be 3 people that you can trust with just being there for you and not trying to say the right thing and not trying to make it better, but just be there kind of thing. And just don't be afraid to like, you know, talk to those people about it. And then I always say like, and I know we talked about this, don't be afraid to talk about that person. They still are a person that was in your life forever. And you probably have so many memories. And if like I'm with a girlfriend and a song comes on that my mom loved, I'll now say like, oh my God, my mom loved this song. Whereas before I would just kind of keep that all to myself. I just think like acknowledging them, which is something like, it sounds so bad because I feel like it sounds like I was like, oh, I'm never going to talk about my mom. But I just didn't ever want to be the buzzkill because I do feel like I always thought when you talk about grief, it had to be so dark and heavy, and podcasts and stuff like this that now I've learned it doesn't have to be that way. So that's been so nice to learn.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that I'll get really comfortable with, or I'm at the point now, I should say, that people are like, how are you? And I'm like, I'm just kind of sad and like missing my dad the past few days. And it doesn't need to be a big deal. And I would say that to a close friend and they would be like, you know, supportive, but it's not like we then do not need to have a 45 minute conversation about
exactly.
it. It's just acknowledgement of like, oh, like, and it's like Corona, so you can't see anybody, but people are like, well, thinking about you, like sending you whatever you need. And that's enough. My favorite thing to talk about, and I do this segment with, I think, all of the guests, of what are things that you hate hearing and what are things that you like hearing?
I hate hearing your mom's in a better place.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to think. I know there's one more and I'm totally blanking right now. I don't know. Just all that cliche shit. Like, I hate
your God mom's needed in a better an angel. Place. Oh, isn't that the one we talked about?
Probably.
Before we started recording.
I have some very religious aunts who, yeah, you know, this was God's plan. I'm like, oh, that's good for him because it sucks for me. Like, Jesus. Like, just little things like that. I think when it's coming from the heart and it's coming from, like, I'm so sorry. I hate when people say I can't imagine because I'm always like, well, yeah, I couldn't imagine either. And look where we're at now. But I get it. They mean it from a good place. And I just think anything from the heart is going to be nice. But when you start doing those like Hallmark card responses, just save it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think like what I like to hear. I just love when people ask about my mom and ask about like, oh, what was your mom like? What was her personality? Like, what did y'all do? Just acknowledging her like we've talked about. So even if I'm not sad about it, I still just like when people bring her up. I think it's nice. It's a smile on my face.
And it doesn't, I think the thing that I want people to know so badly is the acknowledgement does not need to be, it can still be happy. Like,
exactly.
It doesn't need to bring the conversation to this really dark place. And I think that's why people don't say anything is because they're nervous about that. But just,
and they're like, I don't want to ruin your day by bringing it up. I feel like that's what they think.
Right. And it's like, no, I think about him every day. Like, we're good.
Like, isn't it crazy how not a day has gone by that I haven't thought about my mom in 4.5 years? And I know people are like, well, she was alive, you would think about her too. But it's just crazy. It's so, I'm like, what else do I think about every day? Barely my husband. I'm just kidding. wait, I have a question. You said holidays were really hard. Was it just Christmas, or because would y'all have Christmas there? What was the hardest part?
So Easter was a week after he died, or 2 weeks after.
Oh, okay.
And we did it at his house. And I was just like, I started like hysterically crying at the table. Yeah. And then like went outside and like smoked. I don't smoke cigarettes. Oh, and I smoked like 8 cigarettes. And was just like drinking and crying and having kind of a disaster moment. Because I was like looking around the table and I was like, he's not here. He's never going to be here again. Mm-hmm. And just like spiral right on down. And then like summer was super weird last year. Just generally we were like cleaning the house out and I would just expect him to come outside, you know, or like when I would like walk, my bedroom was, it was a split level. And so I, from my room would walk upstairs to the kitchen and I could see into his office and I would just like expect to see him sitting exactly. in his chair. And I was like, he's not going to be there. So that was just like strange of like being in the space and having him not be there. And then Christmas last year we did at my cousin's and it was like really lovely, but mm-hmm. I was just like, I wasn't drinking because I didn't want to get, I was like nervous I was going to get sick. So I like to generally cut alcohol if I'm nervous about my immune system. And I just hung out with my like nieces and nephews who were like Aww. 8, 11 and 12. And I was like, I don't want to like talk to any grown-ups yeah. and like, I'm not interested. So that's like my general coping strategy at family functions though. If I'm not in the mood, like I'm just going to hang out with the kids yeah. because like I'm obsessed with my nieces and nephews anyway. Like what do you yeah. do for holidays? Because you don't have the house you grew up in anymore, right?
Correct. My new favorite thing that me and my brothers do is we always now travel for Christmas. Because we don't have, I don't have any kids or anything. Like we don't have a reason to like come to my house for Christmas. So we use it as a vacation now. Other than that, like we could probably get better about other holidays. Like Thanksgiving, I'm usually with my in-laws. So that's fine. But even like Mother's Day and stuff, we're all in different states. So it's hard for us to do something. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we'll text each other and just, I love you, smiley face, like thinking of you. So that's nice. But wait, I was going to go back to how you said you thought your dad would just like show up in the house. Because I think that's something. So when my mom passed away in hospice, you go home. So I went home and I'm like, she's just going to like, she's right behind us. Like, why would she not be in her house? It like was a mind, like it messed with my mind.
Well, someone was talking about this week that I follow on my podcast account of like the secondary grief that's associated with like losing a place and like your relationship mm-hmm. to that place. And I think that that's so important because, and I talk about this, I think almost every episode, that his house was like the house that yeah. like we had family functions at and like I would go to with my friends. And so like losing that in addition to, so yes, it was so terrible and we were cleaning the house out and he wasn't there. But because you just think he's going to be there. And I still like, he's still on my phone. He's still in my favorites. I'm like, oh, I should call him. I like still have moments of like, I should call him. And then I'm like, you can't fucking do that. Yeah. Do you have that ever?
So I actually talked about this in one of my intros, actually the one you're on in my intro.
Good.
Yes, queen. I'll have dreams that are so real that I wake up thinking I need to call my mom. And I'm like, I'm not in denial. Like, I know my mom's dead, but like for a split second when I'm coming out of that sleep, I'm grabbing my phone kind of thing. But I will not mm-hmm. delete my mom's number out of my phone. And I don't care if that's weird. I'm not doing it.
No. I would like still call him to hear his voicemail.
I can't even like read old texts from my mom and stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you ever look at like old birthday cards or anything?
Yeah, but that I don't really, it's just old, like just conversations. I don't know why I can't like visit those. My husband's different. He reads them all the time when he misses my mom. He goes through those and then my aunt will like text her phone. And that's another story.
Does someone have the number? Are they nice to her? I've heard stories about this. They're nice.
Yes. And it's some like 16-year-old who's like an artist and will like be like, look at my artwork today. And I'm like, oh my God, this is so weird. This is so weird, but whatever works for you, dude, with grief.
Yeah, whatever works. I think what happens and what I've read about is people will text the number as a habit still and like, I miss you, but then like it will get reassigned because there's like a period of time before it gets reassigned. Mm-hmm. But then once it gets reassigned, like people answer And
yeah, I don't like it. I don't like it.
No, I've never done that. I'm too scared.
Yeah, no. I don't want to see like my mom's texting, you know, I don't like that, but it works for her. And that's why grief is like, oh my God, I read a book. It said grief is like a snowflake. There's not one just like the other or something.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true though. And I think like, how do we build empathy and compassion for each other? And it is that like, whatever anyone is doing is okay.
Amen.
Because it's like what they need at the time.
Exactly. I agree. Yeah. 100%. Except how my brother handles it, I don't know, but I'm just kidding.
So is there any like last parting thoughts of things? I feel like we hit a lot, but if like there's anything we didn't talk about.
No, I just hope it wasn't too dark because we talked about hospice a lot, but I don't like talking about it. Like I said, it's like the worst part of my memory that I block out, but I think it's healthy for other people that have maybe gone through a cancer loss to hear like, you're not alone. We went through that hospice, their body degrading thing. So I hope, you know, someone can relate to our dark story.
I think they can. Like that's okay, why good. People listen to both of our podcasts is unfortunately a lot of people can relate to these things.
Yes. Fit so, together though. We got this.
We got it. All right. Do you want to tell people where to find you online?
Yeah. So stuff? I am on Instagram and it's Grief Unfiltered. And then I am wherever you can find podcasts at Grief Unfiltered.
Amazing. All right. Thank you so much for being here. This was a really good conversation today. And this was, I know, a longer episode, but I didn't want to stop the conversation because I thought it was really important.
Okay, good. We were talking. Thank you, Brooke. I love talking with you.
I love talking with you too. Thank you everyone for listening. You can find us online at @_griefcoach. The website is www.thegriefcoach.co. And if you are finding the podcast to be valuable, please write a nice review on Apple Podcasts so other people who need this type of content can find it. And I will talk to you guys soon. Thank you.